Once a photograph of the Earth, taken from outside, is available, we shall, in an emotional sense, acquire an additional dimension. Let the sheer isolation of Earth become plain to every man, whatever his nationality or creed, and a new idea as powerful as any in history will be let loose. Sir Frederick Hoyle, Astronomer, 1948. Foreword by Valerie Anders. On August 25th, 2012, Bill and I were in our hangar hosting a party for donors to the Orcas Island Chamber Music Festival, which I chair, when a friend called to say Neil Armstrong had passed. Bill made an emotional announcement to the crowd, and that night at the festival's final concert, the Miro Quartet played the Ashokan Farewell as a tribute to Bill in memory of Neil. Suddenly a friend, a peer and a national hero, was gone, but I realized the history of the Apollo program could slip away just as easily. In the time since our Apollo days, some two generations of Americans have grown up who have no memory of those events, and who will not understand the world we lived in unless our stories are told. Times have changed so much. In the 1950s and 60s, it was my job as a military wife to be the support crew, to stay home with five children and run the household alone. Generally, Bill could only be home on weekends. This week, our sixth child, Diana, the only child I know of born after a lunar flight, will be able to celebrate earning her PhD, her 40th birthday, and her son's fourth birthday all together. People have asked me how I could sit at home and watch the Apollo 8 launch on TV with the children rather than watching from the Cape. But at the time, the Hong Kong flu was rampant and our house was surrounded by reporters and TV cameras. Experiencing the launch in the presence of many of our family and friends seemed a safer place for us all to be, and the squawk box provided continual though delayed radio transmissions. During planned maneuvers, there was always another astronaut there for explanation and support, along with lots of friends, family, and the wives of other astronauts. Women friends brought food and home-baked goodies for all of us inside the house, where we gathered, drinking coffee and listening to the communications from the spacecraft and the control center in Houston. We were not alone just watching TV. Meanwhile, our Air Force peers were in Vietnam being shot at, some of whom never returned, while others returned forever changed by that war. In that risk environment, I felt that Apollo 8, in spite of being a battle in the Cold War, was a more positive mission, and one that my husband had trained many years for. I knew that whatever happened, my children were the priority. I didn't allow myself to think past the events of the day. The intensity of the time demanded I stay focused on the present. Reflecting back over the intervening decades, one other thing stands out. The Apollo 8 crew are all still married to our original spouses. We are the only complete crew whose marriages have survived both Apollo and its aftermath. Robert Zimmerman's book captures, along with the technical aspects of the Apollo 8 mission, the human history of that era, of the Apollo 8 flight, and the effect that Apollo had on the astronauts and their families. When I first read this excellent account, published before the end of the space shuttle era, I was delighted that it had been recorded so well. Now, with the technology of the e-book, this new edition has been made available to a new generation of readers who face a vastly different future in space than the one we once imagined.